don't fall in love with your products, because first of all, yeah, most of the mistakes youth or my fellow young people do is they fall in love with their products. When you fall in love with your product, you tend to, instead of improving it, you always try to defend it or to protect it. So when someone says, "I think this doesn't look good, you must try this," you feel like you are attacked, and then you are like, "No, but I know my product work." Instead of improving it, you are always defending it.
First of all, I need to thank you so much for the time, and then thank you for being open, because I was reading just a couple of weeks ago an article of startups in Africa, and they had tagged on Startup Blink Rwanda as one of the upcoming is for startups, particularly when it comes to artificial intelligence, software development. So really, when we're speaking of the technology world, that Rwanda is one of the African countries that is also leading the sphere. And that's how I came across Awesome Nitty. Please correct me. That's not the right way to pronounce it.
It's just Osamiti.
Osamiti. Okay. Nice. And I found your story quite interesting, remarkable. So yeah, thank you so much for the openness here. And I'm honored to actually be taking this time to dive into your story.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much also for your time and for considering us.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward. Maybe to start up, Yuvis, maybe if you could introduce yourself. I know that I have murdered your name even, but please, if you could introduce yourself and tell us what you're doing at the moment, and then we can dive into your story.
All right. My name is Yves Honoré, and I am a co-founder at Osamiti Lab, and also head of design at Osamiti Lab as well. Yeah, I don't know if that's enough.
Perfect. I mean, whatever it is that contributes to Yves, you know.
Yeah.
How did you start? Like, what was the inspiration to go through this journey versus going through the 5-to-9 job?
All right.
To start up.
Back when we were in high school, me and my team, my fellow co-founders, we joined a code club program organized by Hehe Labs. I don't know if you know the company. It's called Hehe Labs.
Hehe, like the laugh, like hehe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a software development company back in 2015-14, and then they organized this 6-month program where they teach high school students about some basics on programming, HTML and stuff. Yeah. And then we joined as high school students. And then after the program, we really liked the coding world, if I can say. And then we, me and my fellow co-founders, and then we started some small startups. But because we developed some small apps and like gaming apps for children, and then it didn't get that much hype or but it was really enough for us to love it, to keep going. And then that's how we met, and then we found Osamity Lab.
Nice. And I'm just imagining high school student, right? And if I go back through my life, well, I had a vision for my life, right? And I like one of the things you wrote on your page as you're, you know, describing your story was in 2015, you're like, why aren't we rich yet? You know,
after
graduating from we expected our products to kick off.
Yeah.
And you thought you would become millionaires right by the end of that year if you have a great name. The name itself is pretty dope, and you have a great team, right? So you went through that steep hill of discovering it takes way more to a great startup, right? I would like you to kind of walk me that the high school student and you guys are coding, you love it. Had you actually ever coded before? And when you realized that the journey was much tougher than it seemed, what kept you going?
I would say we liked what we were doing. I think we were passionate about coding, because for us, even if we wanted to be millionaires, by then we were not money driven. We just wanted to, we just wanted to work. We just wanted to see our apps being used by people, because by that time, that was all we wanted. So I think that kept us going, and also some really good feedbacks from different people, and also by working on so many projects. And then, for example, you work on this one project and then it fails, and then people show you how you could have done it better, and then we try again. So I think by always trying to make our projects or our product better, it was the main reason where we kept going, because it was like we know what to do different next, and then we want to try it out. So I think that's what kept us going.
That's beautiful. And I assume back in 2015, your goal really was to understand the process, to keep continually improving your products, getting them used over and over again. Had you ever coded before? Because it's a new area, right? Specifically for African youth. What was your first contact with coding?
It was that program at Hehe, because that's when we wrote our first line of code, and then we were excited, and then we wanted to keep going. It was back then.
Wow, 5 years ago. What has changed now when you look back 5 years? And now it's 2020, and your first encounter with code was in 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
What has changed throughout these, 5 years of developing, of rewriting code, cleaning out bugs, etc., and so forth? What has changed when you think now of coding back then and coding now as an African youth, as a person living in Rwanda?
I'll say personally, and then I'll go even on my team perspectives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did a little bit of a background. When we started coding together, we were all coding, like we were all doing same stuff, like all of us with basic HTML, some JavaScript, some mobile apps. And then we were like at the same level. And then by after a year or two, we found that some of us are really good. We found that coding have like a lot of like industry, if I can say, or some different parts. So we found that some of us were not really good at one part, and then and yet they are really good on the other part. For example, I was good with design, and then by applying code and design, I found myself being more like a UI and UX developer, developing interface, designing. And my fellow co-founders, some of them found that they are really good at backend. I hope you understand. Some of them front end. So to answer your question, what really changed, each and every one of us focused on like one area instead of going in different like languages or back end of front end stuff, and because of focusing on one thing, it helped us being even better in that thing. For example, applying some best practices of doing stuff, digging deeper. For example, on my part on UI and UX, it's more of understanding the user more than just coding or making a cool app. You can make a cool app, but the user cannot understand it, or it's cool to you but not to the user. So so it helped me like focusing more on the user and trying to learn some psychology stuff about the user, being in their shoes, trying to understand their problems and then solve them through maybe coding or making softwares. So I think what really changed is we've learned a lot, and then also by applying also some best practices. So I think it's more, it's getting better and better every day. And also not really focusing on the codes, but also the business side of it. Before we used to focus on just coding, but right now we also focus on the business side of it.
Absolutely. That sounds like a very holistic way of taking it. And I mean, it also goes into the arena of the misconceptions of coding, right? When now you say, well, the user is one of the fundamentals. You can have a very cool app, but if the user doesn't understand it, that's it. So that's quite interesting. I would like to dive into one or three practical changes that you've made. I also see that as time went by, you speak of failures as breakfast, right? And I feel there are a lot of young people who see coding as a fantasy. I will give you an example. I'll tell you a little secret, and it's the first time I've actually shared this story. I studied the first 3 months of my university computer science because I had a fantasy relationship with coding at that time. And in the end, after my first semester, I had to sit myself down, but it was also for several reasons. One, because I had never had an encounter with with codes. I was getting into a class with people who were already advanced in HTML, in Java, and I was starting up as, you know, really from the bottom. So I set myself down and I said, well, do you want to code the rest of your life? And I think I really had misunderstood what software engineering was about. And then I changed my degree to biotechnology, biochemical engineering. And right now, today, I still do encounter, you know, some part of some form of software engineering, because in the companies that I interact with, the biggest conversations, you know, are about, do we have the right processes and systems in place to equip our people? And you go back to that software engineering discussion. So those 3 months kind of helped me. But I feel, you know, as young people, especially African youth, there's that misconception of what software engineering is about. There's also that misconception of failure, right? Which is... your journey, what you describe, is really putting together a structure based on the experiences you were having and being willing to fine-tune and learn from that. So maybe you can walk us through three practical changes that you had to make through your journey as you were failing, and how that made you, you know, who you are today, because I feel your story is really one of those success stories for young people who want to dive into software engineering and make a business out of it as well.
The first thing I'll say, we don't be money driven. Like, don't expect profit right away. Sometimes you, for example, on our story, when we were starting, we wanted some clients, and then we knew that clients, the only way to get clients is to get a portfolio, because clients want to see what you've been doing so that they can trust you to also, if you can do their work. So for us to have like a portfolio, it's like we have to make a lot of projects, sometimes for free or for on a lower cost. For example, we did many websites for free, just for the sake of having like a portfolio. So the first the first thing is, don't be money driven. Put work first, and then the rest will come. And then the second one is, I'll say, don't. Don't fall in love with your products, because first of all, most of the mistakes youth or my fellow young people do is they fall in love with their products. When you fall in love with your product, you tend to, instead of improving it, you always try to defend it or to protect it. So when someone says, I think this doesn't look good, you must try this, you feel like you are attacked, and then you are like, no, but I know my product work. Instead of improving you are always defending it. That would be the second. And then the third one is like choosing the right people the team is a crucial thing, because for example, no one of us were getting paid for like 3 or 2 years, so it requires like people who understand, who you share the same passion, the same vision. yeah, who you share like the same thoughts. So
absolutely.
To summarize it, like don't be money driven and don't fall in love with your products and choose the best team. I think that's it.
That's really a nice summarized three points. I loved especially the don't fall in love with your product.
Yeah.
Because normally even in anything that one does, if you're too attached to it, you feel attacked personally when people are giving you even constructive feedback.
Yeah.
That's actually quite important. On the team part, give us some insiders on your team, because a lot of times people are like, yeah, the team can make or break a startup, right? What was your criteria for you guys? I know that you started as high school students in that Hehe program. Yeah. However, what drew you guys together? And now 5 years later, when you look at the team structure, because I know now you specialized based on your strengths, and you continued building up that team in that arena of expertise. Yeah. And then so forth. So how did you guys come together? What was the criteria? Or just maybe tell us a little bit about your team. Who is this Osamity team, right?
Yeah. We found a company. We are four. And One thing about us is that no one does the same thing with like the other ones. For example, our CEO, Lionel, he likes coding too, but he's good at talking to people, closing some deals. Like he's really a good leader. That's why even we made him our CEO, and we have also Eve. He's really good at accounting. He's really good at money. He's the one who put the pricing on the clients. He's the one who set the budgets. He's the one who deal with money. And also we have Yannick. He's really good at also coding, but on the server side, he's really good at technology. That's why he's even our CTO. He's the one dealing with the right tools to use, the right technology stuff like that. And also me, I was good with design and also understanding like the clients. That's why right now I'm in UI and UX. So the thing about our team is that by that time when we were not when we can't afford to hire some people, we could do our job our own, so without having troubles hiring like other people. So I think that's what also kept us going, because we didn't need other people, because we were enough to start a company. So the youth or my fellow youth, like the mistake they always make when trying to create the team, they just see their friends, like instead of doing what everyone will do or will contribute to, we bring to the table, they always tend to look for their friends, their classmates, or someone who just want to jump right in. But you may find that they're team of five, and then they are forming like a software development company, and then you find that no one of them who is good maybe at talking to people, or who is good at money, at finance, stuff like that. And then you find that they always have a need to hire like someone else to do that. So I think, I don't know if I answered your question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in terms of how your team structure took place, how you guys, I still haven't figured out how you guys came together, right? Because that's, I think, the challenge that also people have, and why they end up falling back on friends, right? Because maybe they can't find the right people. So I'm still missing that aspect in the sense of, did you guys just walk through the Rwandan streets and then boom, you met, you know, you met your CEO and then said, you seem like a good guy. You know, like I really want to know, like, how did you guys run that assessment? And
all right.
And maybe first of all, how did you meet? How did you guys match together?
First of all, we were classmates in high school, and then when Hehe Lab started that program, we got lucky to be selected to join the program. And then at Hehe Labs, they formed like teams, because we were working on different projects. So me and Yannick were in one team, and then the other two were part of other teams. So at Hehe Labs, we were like almost 30 high school students. So when we were developing like those solutions, it was those mobile apps, and then we found that like most of the time we were caught up with deadlines, and then we might spend like nights at Hehe Labs office, and then that's where we actually met. Like in my team, me and Yannick, we found ourselves spending the night there, and then in Lionel's and Eve's team, we found that Lionel and the other guy also spend nights at the office trying to finish the apps. And then by that time, that's when we were like few. We were just like six in the room and then at night, in the night, and then that's how we talk, and then we even helped each other on others products. For example, I can help them with design, they help us with some backend stuff. And when the program is complete, that's when we kept talking, because by that time I knew who is doing what, and then also we got to know each other, I can say. Yeah.
It's really nice. That's a story of dedication as well, like spending nights to finish products and supporting each other through that.
Yeah.
That's magic. Yeah. Nice. And when I think of all of you, you are all based in Rwanda, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. That's nice. Well, what is the ecosystem in Rwanda like? What makes it a conducive place to run a company? Because this is what I also hear so often in the media, that Rwanda is one of the booming places when it comes to ease of registering companies, of support from the state and so forth. Is that really true? Or it's just the media?
I think it's true. It's true because, for example, here to register a company, it only took you like 6 hours, or you can't exceed
6 hours.
Yeah, you can register just a company. And also, I don't know if it's 6 hours, but it wouldn't exceed like a day. trying to register
company. That's amazing. I hope other African countries are listening to this. It takes one day to register a company. That's amazing. Yeah.
And also, I think the government tried to promote our youth projects. For example, they have like this thing, this program. I don't know if you ever heard like a BDF program where they help like youth with some projects to get loans from the bank, and then they I don't know how they call it. You see, when you want to have a loan in the bank, you have to give something. You have to give something so that in case you don't pay for the loan, the bank can sell that thing like a house or how do you call that?
What's the term? Liability. It's more like this. There's a term. I honestly don't have it at the top of my head, but I know what you mean. All right.
Most of the youth here don't have like other assets so that they can give it to the banks. As something when they can't pay the loan, so that the bank will sell that thingy. So the BDF, what it does, it's like provide that thing for the youth so that the bank can trust the youth to get loan. And then they give them they have access to loans very easily. And then also, always the government try to promote the youth projects and by introducing some competitions, like stuff like that. They really try to promote youth projects and businesses. I think that's why it's very easy here to start a startup. Yeah, and then they also easy the taxes for like new businesses. If you're just starting a startup, there are some cuttings on taxes, stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, that's quite remarkable. So the government really subsidizes the requirements for young people who have their startups compared to bigger entities. That's amazing. So it is true that Rwanda is a good place, especially for young people to be creative and to be courageous to start something. Nice. What else? You know, when you think of your team, because I do understand you started as four co-founders. You guys were wearing your hats already in that time, and you have grown since then, right? So when I think of your growth, or when you think of your growth, what aspects have led to this growth being successful? I know previously you mentioned the three things, you know, let money not be the goal, have a good team, and do not be so tied to your product or whatever it is you're doing in order to improve it. When we now look at the business part and the growth of you guys from that four, I don't know, how many people are you now at the moment?
At the moment we are like 15 plus.
15?
We're like 15. We have like four people working in business. And we have two designers, and we have about seven programmers, developers.
Yep.
yeah, I think that's it. And we have some also remote employees, some like one or two.
Okay. That's interesting. Also with this arena, with the whole corona happening, and remote work becoming the thing.
Yeah.
Do all your people come from Rwanda, or you also have interactions with other Africans across the continent?
At the moment, all of them are from Rwanda.
Okay.
Yeah, but when we try like to work, when we try to look into remote work, we could maybe also look into some other African countries.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm asking for all those people who will be eyeing your your startup and company, you know, as a place to work, a future place to work and grow. Absolutely. And given that the software arena is growing, what is your vision of software, particularly first and foremost in the Rwandan ecosystem, and then maybe at large in the African continent? What is your vision? What does the future of software look like?
For example, here in Rwanda, they are pushing... Yeah. They are pushing everything to be digital because almost everything in the government institutions were like a lot of paperwork, a lot of physical interaction. But they are trying to push everything go digital. So I think our vision is to be part of that, is to create some solutions of that will be used by our government and also the whole Africa, because we also spend a lot of money buying like softwares outside to solve our own like problems. So it's our vision to create like solutions that are relevant to our problems, because we are the ones who really understand what we are going through, and we are the ones also to provide like those solutions, because I believe we understand and more than like anyone else who could like sell to us some solutions from outside. Yeah, I think that's it.
Absolutely. And that's a very important message there, in the sense of, if you look at the statistics of how many softwares are outsourced outside of the continent versus inbred solutions, I would bet my life that we are not yet at that even 20% mark of internal inbred solutions. And also, I also get the feeling in terms of scaling up that there is somehow that fear of what digitalization means, right? I was having a conversation with a friend, and there is in most companies a head of digital, head of digitalization, right? And people kind of imagine this guy or girl walking across the tables, pulling all the papers and say, no, we're not going to be using papers, right? But then the digitalization is really when I saw on your portfolio of companies that you've worked with, and these are people who continue in the day-to-day industry, but still need some form of digitalization to push and scale up. When I think of even the agriculture, the automotive industry, there's so many applications for that. When it comes to you and your team and giving local solutions or advertising yourself, and not even advertising yourself because you are a local company, what has been the perception and what has been the reception to you as a local Rwandan company scaling up?
To be honest, like, for example, here in Rwanda, as you said, most of the people don't know, like, don't feel like they need their services to be like digital. Even right now, the higher percentage of the clients we have are not local clients. They are from outside Africa. We still have a long journey to help our like local fellows to understand why they should go digital. And for example, in Rwanda during this coronavirus, most of the businesses, like most of the shops, most of the like the malls kept those who were present online, they kept like working, because now someone can order some products and then they deliver them to their houses. And then for those who were not like present online, they face like a really big loss, because right now I think due to this coronavirus, some of the businesses started realizing how crucial being digital is. So I think I have faith that maybe the future is bright. Maybe people will start to understand how crucial is being digital is. So let's hope that they will understand it, and eventually more like markets, which will boost even most of the software development companies and other startups to provide like solutions to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. And that's actually a very powerful message, because when I look at the market, right, at the demand and supply, I feel the fact that Africa is so young, like the percentage of people aged between just 15 and 35 is over 50%. And when I look at the demographics in Europe, or even America, the populations are becoming older. And so you have that young energy in Africa, and you have that, you know, budding and being shown in companies like yours. And if you're already servicing companies that are outside, also because I feel to be honest, there's also that cost aspect. If big companies, and I think of the whole Microsofts, the big giants, are so expensive. I think they're honestly, the African youth have so much potential in offering products or services that are way and quality wise comparable, and still at a very better pricing, and then better service, in the sense that if you are digital, you can work honestly from anywhere, you can service anybody. So for me, I feel if the local people do not jump on this train soon, that the train, it might be too late, and then for, you know, it will be definitely too much of a steep for locals to be, you know, going that slow, because the market is there. The market is there. But just locally, we're a little bit slower there. So there's so much potential. Maybe for you guys and your team, to wrap up, what are some of your your dreams? I would like to avoid where do you see yourself in 10 years, because Corona happened and people completely forgot about where they see themselves in 10, 5 years from now. But if you would share just your vision of companies like yours, what is your vision and dream when it comes to the African landscape?
Right now we do a lot of client work, because actually that's what pays rent,
that's what pays the bills.
Our vision is to create our own solutions, like our products. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taking an example on Google, they have a lot of their products, and then we are always relying on them in our everyday life. So I think our vision as a company is to create a lot of products that can be used by like ourselves, that can be used by Africans, that are relevant to our continent. So first of all, that's our vision. And another thing we wanted to equip like Africans or our fellow youth with skills, because sometimes we lack of that like skills. We are always like, in terms of skills, we are always like halfway. We wanted to equip like our fellow Africans to actually have that competitive advantage with other like programmers, like, you know, in India or any other country. Because sometimes even our companies in Africa don't trust like programmers in Africa, and because they doubt like their skills, stuff like that. Mm. So we wanted to remove that like stereotype. We wanted to show that even African programmers can do something great that can be trusted and be used.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. How are you doing that in terms of equipping young people now on the Rwandan context? Because I also feel that's something that needs to be collaborated with the educational system, right? I go into the curriculum right now, in any, at least where I come from in Zimbabwe, I go into the curriculum, we still have some missing elements as well to make it practical for budding programmers. How are you doing that when you say equipping young people?
First of all, we considered our own experience, because like I studied computer science and my fellow co-founders, we studied computer science. But to be honest, what we studied in school versus what we studied on YouTube and Google, what we are doing right now is not what we studied in school. It's like what we self-taught but on YouTube or Google. The only thing that motivated us, like that program really helped us, that Hehe program, because they didn't teach us much of the coding, because they just showed us, they just pointed us the way, and then we followed that way. So that's what we are doing right now, because we know in high schools or in schools we don't learn things that may be relevant to the market. We just learn things that will be used to pass our exams, to get the best degree, but not really relevant on the market. So what we do, we like every year we have like this task force program also. It's kind of like the Hehe program where we invite like six or five of high school students, and then we also introduce them to real world like coding experience. We show them the processes we use, we show them like the languages we use, the best practices, so that we can also create like some Osamities in the future. We can just, what it just requires is just to inspire someone to point, to show direction to someone, then they will do the rest. I think that's what right now we are doing. Another thing we are doing is our hiring process, because we don't consider like CVs or how good you are, but we consider how willing you are to learn new stuff. So when we hire someone, we give them like 2 months where we teach them some our ways of coding, and then by the time after two months, and then we can go ahead and start our contract, like a real contract. But we like to promote learning rather than like hiring someone who says that he's good in this, he's good in this. Yeah, we promote those who are willing to learn.
I love that. I love that. And I think this is the future. I mean, the CV, honestly, is one of the most misused paper. Certificates. Misused. And the idea of learning, that's really amazing, and how you are integrating that into your hiring process. I wish more companies would do that, like just literally hire people based on their ability to grow, to learn, on their potential to learn. That's amazing, and a really great work that you're doing, especially from a high school level, because I feel after university, that's already a bit too late to onboard people, but really from that high school level. Absolutely amazing work. So Osamity, what does Osamity mean? You said awesome and creativity.
Actually, when we were in Hehe Labs. Remember that we were forming like small groups, and then one of our group called Osamity, which was like awesome creativity. It's not that creative, but and then when we wanted to register our company. Remember, I told you that here it can take you only 1 day to register a company, and then we were trying to brainstorm a name for our company, and then we couldn't find the name in just 1 day, and then we were like, let's tell them, and then we were like, let's put Osamity as a placeholder, and then we think of the name later, because we wanted to register that business, our startup. So after being called the Osamity, I think people really liked it, and then we said, okay, let's keep the name, and then we even made the logo, and then we fell in love with the logo, and then we were stuck with the name Osamity.
But it's a nice it has a nice vibe to it. Nice. And then the way you describe the process with so much ease. You wake up one morning, you're like, let's just do this. Let's just put a placeholder and we'll think about the rest later.
That's nice.
The courage to just do things. As we wrap up, you know, For me, honestly, thank you so much. It was an honor to hear your story, to also hear the challenges, right, and what you're doing to address those. When you talk about gaps of skills within the young African programmers, how you're closing that. I love that. And I think this is what we need more of in order to become competitive on the global landscape, and not just as Africa. I think the thought of servicing local African needs, that's great. However, the vision as well is that the African company is also a globally renowned company. What you say, you know, making products that are relevant to the situations around today. That's remarkable. I want to, you know, like share something on Rwanda. At least I want to walk into a memory that you have of Rwanda, because I have never been in Rwanda. And I think a lot of people hear so many amazing stories of the business ecosystem in Rwanda. Maybe if you could, as a closing, I don't know what to call it, closing experience for people listening to you. How is your day to day in Rwanda? What is the most the most amazing either place or thing about Rwanda that you can share that has also made your life as a co-founder much more easier or much more enjoyable because you are stationed in Rwanda? Maybe something that you can share with us on what Rwanda is like.
First of all, I'll say like two things. Rwanda, I think Rwanda is very, first of all, Rwanda is very clean. Like when you are,
I've heard that. Yeah.
When you are like, in the morning when you are like driving to work, it's really beautiful to see those green trees and the clean roads. It's really very clean. And the second one is Rwanda, the security, because like here in Rwanda you can just walk like at 2 a.m. alone in streets, and there's light everywhere, and then that's really as people work in startups, we found ourselves always leaving work at, for example, at 10 p.m. So there isn't that fear of like getting home at that time. It's very safe. You can even walk home at like 12 a.m. without any any fear. I think that's really good. Yeah, the cleanliness and safety.
The cleanliness and safety. Yeah. I love that you say that. You know, because a lot of people who don't know the journey of Rwanda think of Rwanda, and what I see so many times is the genocide, right? Yeah. And when you say safety, that for me is so powerful, because when people date back, I think people sometimes fix a country and then they don't want to move with the country's progression, right? And I feel your country and its people has done really so much to address what happened during those times, and to make, if I hear now you say, well, it's fine for me to walk at 12 midnight without worrying about what happens to me, that to me shows a country that is and has progressed
from
what people know. Great. Thank you so much. I don't want to dive into the genocide with you. I think that was back in the day. And honestly, I think now it's the future for Rwanda is so bright. And by not discussing it today, I think it doesn't dismiss the situation or what happened. I think people have spaces that they discuss this, but honestly, for me, was quite an honor to share in part in the journey of Rwanda and its people, and really of Osomity and your team, and to hear the things that are happening on the ground, the challenges that you have faced, the determination, because it's not everyone who wears multiple hats. It's not everyone who has the courage to say, hey, I want to do something completely new with a group of people that they meet or have studied with, and to form a business out of that, which is working and has potential to grow and scale up. So congratulations on that.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you very much as well for considering like me to talk about Osamiti as well. I really appreciate.
Absolutely. Me as well. Thank you so much.